right. It's Martin and Gregorio.
Martin and Greg.
And Greg. We are back, and we get to do some good reflection time on our interview with Kate and her experiences and where she's at. And to all of our listeners, thank you for tuning in to the conversation with Kate, and thank you for tuning into this conversation with me and Greg.
Yeah, guys, thanks for tuning in. And what do I want to say to you? Keep it up. Keep listening. Don't stop. Yes.
Keep sharing.
Love it. Martin, I'm trying to be a little looser in the confidence that I can just cut things that I don't want to keep in, you know?
I hope you accidentally leave it in.
Just so. Worry less about what I say so that maybe I'll actually be honest, you know?
I like it. Ooh, I like that. I don't know how much honesty we want, though. I mean, that... Well, I like that our honesty is definitely... It's honesty that has been reined in by appreciation, right? So this is appreciative inquiry and... we're definitely coming at this with a certain lens, with a certain kind of bias. Mm. And our bias, part of the bias is, I know that God has been at work in these conversations that we're having, like on this podcast. I know that the Holy Spirit is at work and has been in each and every one of the lives of the people that we've been interviewing and in their interactions as well. In their all of their relational interactions. Mm-hmm. And so, that's the grounding, that's the foundation, right, for our appreciative approach. And there is so much to appreciate with each of these folks.
Absolutely.
I've just been so thankful for a chance to sit down with these. I feel very honored, very privileged.
Yeah, it's like a cool thing to just have, the privilege is the right word, right? It to be able to mine the memories and experiences of these significant contributors to what we consider to be like really important work. And it's just cool. Yeah. It's cool to be a part of it.
One of the things that I appreciate about Kate and that interview and even just her situation right now in life, I appreciate the fact that, she's on the ground in another country, and she's getting the kind of experiences that have really they're the kinds of experiences that shaped missiologists. Mm-hmm. Like, if we want to talk about Newbegin, right? India. Mm-hmm. There's no Newbegin without his experience. What I think it was 23 years or something that he spent in India as a missionary. Mm-hmm. Stephen Bevins in the Philippines, Robert Priest in Peru and growing up in Bolivia, Daryl Whiteman in Papua New Guinea and Solomon Islands, Wilbert Schenck in Indonesia. All of these guys, it's their time in another country. It made a significant difference and it helped with shape the trajectory of their scholarship in the future, their careers. And so I see someone like Kate at the early in early phases of her career, on the ground in another country, experiencing language learning, experiencing culture learning, doing that the observation that she talks about a lot, that paying attention, that being aware.
Yeah, it's exciting to think about what that will produce, right?
Yeah,
just no telling. What sorts of research or interest or perspectives might arise out of that? I'll tell you, the thing that struck me about her description of what she's up to at the moment, it was comical to me because she described it as resting, right? She's been teaching, now she's resting. Well, what does that look like? That looks like moving to a country next door to war-torn Ukraine in order for my family to engage in refugee ministry. That's resting. I felt like that was a very missionary answer. You know what I mean? Like
deeply restful. I need to Sabbath, folks. I need to go to northern Ethiopia right now. Like I really need to be in. need to be in Palestine because I need a break.
I appreciate that, and that's a little tongue in cheek, but the truth is, there's a life decision to move to a foreign place, And that's just going to be really formative and significant. And I look forward to seeing in what ways.
Yeah, and maybe it also reflects the heart of a lot of these missiologists that we're talking to, right? It's the heart of someone who's, you know, they have a heart for people, they have a heart for places, they have a heart for, you know, other cultures and people from other cultures, and it's just, you know, I love that aspect of missiology. To be honest, I think that's something that I really appreciate about missiology as a whole. It's just that, you know, the way in which it really does, it grows out of people thinking about the modern missionary movement, right? People within the modern missionary movement.
Yeah.
So just to kind of think back on, you know, the origins of missiology as a field of study, right? So the more formal kind of, you know, once we're kind of developing methodology and theory, you know, so you've got these folks that are, you know, very much involved in the modern missionary movement. Yeah, with all of its issues and baggage, right? Colonialism, yes, you know, white supremacy, all of that junk. And at the same time, you've got people who are moving to these other countries because they love God and they love the world and they want to love God and they want to love the world like God loves the world. And so with all of their baggage, like paternalism, ethnocentrism, they're showing up in these other places. And then they're asking questions like, how do we do this better? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I want to start churches and I want to, like, you know, but there's got to be some resources for people, you know, social sciences. Like, those could be really helpful. Like, what about anthropology? You know, maybe they can help us understand the culture so that we can do a better job of sharing the gospel. And again, though, that it's all motivated by this. No, I shouldn't say all, because again, we're talking about messy people, right? Mm-hmm. In messy times, in messy systems that are, you know, doing their best to walk with Christ and doing their best to, you know, help their churches walk with Christ and partner with what the Holy Spirit is doing. And so, you know, anyway, I think, you know, that whole I'm resting by doing this, I think it points out one of those kind of bright spots for me in missiology.
Yes. And I was kind of reflecting as you were talking on what that thing is, because I know exactly what you mean. It's kind of hard to put a finger on what it is about so many of our missionary friends and missiologist friends. But I mean, I'm actually thinking especially of missionary friends who they just, I think it's xenophilia, right? It's the love of otherness, right?
Yeah.
It's not, that's the opposite of xenophobia, obviously. It's not fear of the stranger, fear of the other, but actually just like this deep love for otherness and the other. And they're so fun to hang out with because of that, right? It's always like, well, let's try that. I've never done that before. And isn't that super interesting? And tell me more about that. And then seeking frameworks for making sense of all of that, because it's not, you know, it's not intuitive. Otherness is not intuitive. There's something to that I really love.
You know, it's interesting. Yeah. I'm thinking back on so my mom stayed with my kids last night. We were, my wife and I went to do an ultrasound. We're 20 weeks into this pregnancy.
Congrats again.
Thank you. An unexpected pregnancy. And we're very grateful. I love God's plan for our lives and the way that it doesn't track with what I have lined up. God doesn't care about my Google Calendar for some reason. Like, I mean, he's like, God takes it into account and he's just like, nah.
Yeah.
that was a nice suggestion, but no. Anyway, so we were doing ultrasound. My mom was there. And my mom, she brings a spirit of joy into a lot of the things that she does and a lot of her relationships and enthusiasm and curiosity. She brings that kind of a spirit, and she brought that into her mission work as well. So for me, growing up on the mission field in central Mexico, we spent 10 years there in central Mexico in the city of Puebla. And when I came back to the States, I cherished that time. It wasn't, like, in my mind, unlike some of our missionary partners, like this was that that was those were cherished years. Mm-hmm. They did not feel like wasted years. And a part mm-hmm. of that was the fact that, you know, it was it's that that sense that my mom, I think, helped bring to the table of like, this is a really special, really cool thing that we get to be with these people, mm-hmm. right? That we get to be in these relationships, that we get to see these places with these people yeah. and experience yeah. all of this. And just that, the enthusiasm, the like the, oh, this is the craziest food ever.
Yeah.
Like, so like, I'm trying to bring this to my own family as well. But like, we went to the Philippines for like, as part of a mission trip, and I took my family. It was the first time that my kids have ever been like overseas for a significant period of time, or for like, so my 10-year-old, 7-year-old, and I was just so thankful for them to get to experience a lot of that stuff. And I was really trying to channel my mom's spirit. I was like, "This is really cool, right?" So, at one point, I'm sitting down at the table where we're being hosted. And you know, they've been really excited about introducing me to different foods, and one of them was balut, and they're like, "Oh, aren't you excited about balut?" And I'm like, "I have no idea what this even is." They're like, "Wait, you've never tried this? Like, you don't even know what?" I'm like, "I have no idea what this is," and they walk in this in the morning, and they've got these two eggs. It turns out they were fertilized duck eggs, right? And they had basically little baby ducks that they had just boiled. Yeah. And you like it liquefies the baby duck inside the egg, and you're supposed to like suck it out. I don't like balut. Like for all of my Filipino friends that are listening in, I love you guys and I love the country, and I'm not a fan of balut. That was not. The thing is that even in that moment, like my kids are watching me and I'm doing my best to like smile and like, uh-huh. like enjoy the uniqueness of the moment.
Exactly. Right?
These are fun people that are wanting to introduce me to like a fun and weird part of their culture. And it's great. It's about people, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. I similarly have tried to instill that in my kids, and most of the opportunities to do that have been actually in relation to Latino cultures, mm-hmm. and similarly, often about food, right? Just being in relationships, friendships with first generation Latino immigrants means, in their homes we eat the food from their country, and I've just taken every opportunity I can to instill in my kids almost like a pride of like, we like the real thing, right? This is, and so don't give me that. No, that's not actually Mexican food. You're don't like do that.
What Taco Bell calls a chalupa.
right. Well, no, even like, you know, so as a Texan, I love Tex-Mex. It's its own category of food. Nobody confuses it.
I'm not Texan, but I love it.
It's awesome. It's awesome. It's not amazing. Mexican food. It's Tex-Mex. Its own thing. It's its own thing. It's a fusion. Love it's a hybrid. It's perfect, right?
Yes.
But I've tried to take the opportunity always with my kids, like, all right, so we're gonna speak to the wait staff in Spanish. We're gonna ask them what they like. We're gonna order the things we don't know. Like, what is this? So like last week, a Guatemalan restaurant opened up in town, and we were like, okay, we're going to the Guatemalan restaurant. And, you know, and the whole experience is, I actually don't know what half of this menu is. These are all words that I'm unfamiliar with.
Right.
We're going to find out. And they're like, but what am I ordering? And we're like, that's the point. We don't know. We're going to find out. It's going to be amazing.
Isn't this fun?
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't this amazing? This is so cool. I can remember it being really fun when I first moved to China to just like open a menu and it's all in Chinese. And so I would just like close my eyes and like lift a finger and then just drop it onto the page somewhere. Right? It's just like, I want this. And you know what? Go ahead and bring me four of these. I don't even know what this is, but bring them for each of my friends. And man, we ordered the weirdest, grossest stuff sometimes. I mean, like stuff that like, I'm like, this was really fun and I'm glad that I did this. And I'm never going to order that ever again if I can avoid it. And of course, in the next week, I still do it. I accidentally landed. Like my finger landed on the same exact place on the page. Shoot, I ordered the whatever again, you know. So, and it you know, it is that. It's, I want my kids to love the experiences. I want my kids to love like you know, that kind of just the adventure of all experiencing different parts of this really fascinating, complex, and messy world that God created. And it's like, this is really cool. And people are really different in other places. And there are a lot of people in the Philippines that really actually, no joke, love balot. And they will, or they will get balot every day if they can.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, and isn't it amazing to be in a place like that?
Yeah. So and different. For me, the shift I'm trying to instill is from, you know, we stick with the food analogy. It's like, it's from, do I know that I'm going to like this as the priority for my ordering experience? Shifting to, am I trying something new?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
it's like the enjoyment. The enjoyment of, I like the taste of this. And there's the enjoyment of, I am discovering something new, something different.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Those are two different enjoyments. Yep. And I'm trying to teach my kids that the first one isn't the only important one. Sometimes it is, you know, we want to have something that's delicious. Okay. You also want to have the joy of exploring something unknown and possibly then actually discovering one of your favorite foods. You don't even know it's your favorite food yet, but you got to take the risk.
I love it. And, you know, this is bringing up one of those other aspects of the interview with Kate. But, you know, it's moving to another country is often not restful, right? Not just countries that are adjacent to war zones, but like just any other country where you do not know the language, you do not know the culture. And if you're going to be intentional about this stuff that Kate talks about, which is, you know, that being aware, that being attentive, that slowing down and observing and paying attention. Anyway, if you're going to do that, it can be incredibly exhausting. You know, I just remember so many days in China where it was like, I'd get to the end of the day and I'm like, what did I do today? I feel so tired. And I feel like the only thing I did was like get yelled at by that guy on the bike. And, you know, I ordered stuff at the local like meat shop, and then I came home, and why do I feel like I just ran a marathon?
Right. Yeah.
Like my brain feels so tired. It's because that learning process, right? That whole I'm paying attention when everything is new and you're having to create new folders to categorize everything. Mm-hmm. It's exhausting. So there's an aspect of it that's also funny, which is like, I'm going to another country to get some rest. Oh man, good. You know, that's good. that's how missiologists rest.
Right? That's we rest. That's wild. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing how accomplished one can feel having traveled to the grocery store, purchased some items, and returned home. It's like, I did it, guys. That's right.
Did you look at what I did? I got broccoli. I got ripped off by the taxi driver.
Sure, of course. Yes, again, yeah. Like, but I got home.
And I got, hey, you know what? I got to explore parts of the city I had never seen before.
That's right.
Thank you, Mr. Taxi Driver.
So, not that, God bless her in her resting, such as it will be. But I think it's interesting you pointed out doing the observing, like survival is exhausting in a foreign context.
Mm-hmm.
How much more exhausting if, like Kate, you're committed to this careful observation?
Like a research project, right? Like you're there for...
Even so much more than that. But I get the sense that Kate actually, this is her modus vivendi, right? That this is...
Right.
Observation is sort of an integrated part of her faith practice, and conscientiously so. And so if you're engaging relationships with, would it be Moldovans? Is that Moldovans?
Yeah.
I think so. And in the midst of culture learning and language learning, and on top of that, trying to be attentive to what's happening, what you're bringing, what they're bringing.
Yes.
What kinds of communication models are you employing? I like it. That's so much more challenging, right? And so truly, yeah. God bless you, Kate. I wish you very, all the best in that process. Because it's a yeah. noble endeavor. It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And to relate well.
To relate well and to think missiologically, right? Because mm-hmm. that's so mm-hmm. much of it for Kate. Thinking missiologically involves, and doing missiology involves that kind of, you know, that slowing down, paying attention to my interpretive processes, to paying attention to how the Holy Spirit is guiding and shaping different conversations and different interactions and all the complexities there. So, you know, I that missiological thinking, I like it when it gets into people's bones, right? Mm-hmm. I like it when it's just part of discipleship. It just becomes part of, like, the way I do life is, you know, I'm thoughtful about my learning processes. I'm thoughtful about how I'm engaging this particular conversation in this particular place. And, you know, and for missiologists, we're backing up then and we're doing the analysis. We're using frameworks. We are writing stuff down. Mm-hmm. And how can we share this then with other people? Right. I mean, how can we help? How could this be helpful for God's people, the church?
Yeah, it's an interesting contrast between Kate and I'm guessing others who are earlier in their careers or in sort of swimming in the waters of up-to-date contemporary missiology and an older generation where, you know, coming out of that older generation, we're often asking this question about, like, well, how does this relate to our American context, right? Missiology is not just for foreign mission work. It's also for us, right? The Newbegin mm-hmm. shift. It's missional church. And we're trying to, like, pull missiology into the present context. And the contrast is Kate her automatic answer to the question about these specific questions that you've asked about missiology, formative experiences, so on, this has to do with how I relate to someone in the hallway. This has to do with a handshake, where there's racial tension. This has to do with, you know, the list goes on, and it's like, you mean that you're doing this interpretive work in those, as she called them, specific little concrete moments. And it's not just about how I'm going to relate across massive cultural distance in a foreign context.
Yes.
Yeah. It's about how I'm going to relate to human beings around me across the barriers that separate us, whether that be racial, whether that be cultural in some other sense, whether that be, you know, again, the list goes on, socioeconomic. Yeah. So, relationship at the heart there.
Yeah, it is. I love that. Thank you. Thank you for pointing that out. I think that's so true. Maybe it feels a little bit different. And it'd be worth kind of sitting and thinking through this a little bit more, but why does it feel different? It feels a little bit different and you know, maybe part of it is that it's how embodied her missiology is. You know, that this is on the ground stuff here in my specific situation. Anyway, it is an interesting contrast. I like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will be interested to hear whether similar things come out with other early career missiologists that you interview. I'm curious. I really have a curiosity now about how their answers to your questions will implicitly sort of address this possibility.
Yeah.
Of really having totally made that shift.
It's an important shift, and you know, I missiologists haven't always been at the forefront of that shift, right? I mean, there's been a sense in which, like, we needed folks. I mean, this might be a different conversation, Greg, but like, it seems like you know, folks like Gustavo Gutierrez, mm-hmm. right, being exposed to those monumental works that are coming from the global south. And, you know, all of a sudden we're reading these things and we're like, wait, maybe my theology is contextual too, right? Maybe, yeah. You know, maybe my gospel is not culture free, right?
Right?
Maybe I need to be thinking less about, you know, the husk and the, what's the seed in the husk,
right,
imagery when we're thinking about the gospel and translating the gospel into different cultures. Maybe that's not as helpful of a metaphor, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, once we start thinking about missiology in terms of the handshake, right? Missiology in terms of how I'm thinking about and framing my interactions in the hallways, mm-hmm. Right here in the country where I grew up.
How I interpret my students' yawns.
Right, exactly.
I'm still definitely going to assume that I'm boring. I mean, I don't know how much my observations are going to help there, but yeah.
I can guarantee that's why my students are yawning.
Yeah,
I
mean, like, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's not because they stayed up all night. It's me.
It's just the content.
Well, yeah, okay, so race.
Yes, another topic that she brought up.
Yes, and it struck me that in my recollection, that has not been brought up, or if it has been, very scarcely on our podcast.
So I was specifically thinking about that this morning and wishing that I had actually transcribed all the interviews already and like, mm-hmm. dropped them into InVivo so that I could just type in, like, because I'm like, how many times has race and racism come up in our interviews so far, right? In the many interviews that we've done, the hours of interviews that we've done, I'm like, that is interesting. How is that? And I'm sure that it has come up. I just can't think of it right now. And it certainly feels like it feels fresh. Like,
yeah,
topic.
I mean, given when we started and what's happened in the U.S. since we started the podcast, I mean, it has to have come up,
but
the fact that we're both struggling to recall any instance in particular, I think is evidence enough that it's interesting that Kate identifies a primary experience missiologically in terms of interracial reconciliation work. And I mean, I definitely understand that sort of work to be part and parcel of missiology. You know, Fuller had a number of years ago a lectureship dedicated to to race issues. I think the book published was Can White People Be Saved? Very fun title.
Love it. Yeah, but, and we had Jennings. Jennings was one of our key speakers for that.
Yeah. Right. And so, that's definitely there. It's just a fact of, I don't know, maybe the coincidences or whatever of our podcast that it hasn't been central, hasn't been anybody else's main answer to the question, you know, name a primary experience.
Right. Yes.
And maybe that's because so much of mission work is cross-cultural in a way that subsumes race, right? Mm-hmm, it's not about intra-American racial dynamics so much as intercultural.
Yes.
All kinds of dynamics.
I think that's got to be one of the dimensions. And I think the other dimension, certainly historically, has been that we as a field of study also struggle with ethnocentrism, right? I mean, and we haven't purged that. That's not something.
Right.
Again, it's that connection with the modern missionary movement, right? Right at this age of exploration, we're so excited. It's all these enlightened Western thinkers that are going out to, you know, westernize the world and thinking about, you know, this Christianity project as a civilizing project as well, you know, and it can't be that we've completely moved away from all of those kind of, you know, just, it's part of our DNA, right? It's like some of these, like, unspoken values that we have, this west to the rest, right? I mean, it's like we have to remind ourselves that this is, you know, it's polycentric, right? That this is, use terms like that in missiology nowadays, right? It's like, oh yeah, it's from everyone to everywhere, everywhere to everywhere, right? All of that kind of stuff. And it's because maybe we're just now starting to do really some great, important critical thinking, looking back and starting to kind of parse out, oh man, there's a lot of baggage of colonialism here. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, I would say, especially since the 90s, there are some shifts that I think that must have been a part of that. But anyway, it is interesting that Kate's the one that brings it up so far, right? Mm-hmm. Brings up these topics so far in a very like prominent way in her interview. And it just hasn't come up yet.
Yeah,
for a lot of other folks.
So this is a bit of a bunny trail, but I just want to riff on something you said.
Yeah.
When you were talking about our DNA, I think you were talking about the West.
Yes, DNA as a field of study. I was thinking missiologists as like in the field of missiology.
This and so what I want to add to that is I actually think, granted, the West per se historically has many sins to confess, but I think the DNA is actually human. I think missionaries from Moldova are also going to be ethnocentric. I think missionaries from China are also going to be ethnocentric.
Yeah.
That manifests in different ways depending on the cultural roots, I suppose.
Yeah.
But
I
think that
it's a weakness, human thing. It is.
I think that weakness is the reason that, in my view, missiology, even though it is largely an expression of Western theology and Western endeavor, including that which is bound up with colonialism, is an inheritance for the entire global church. Mm-hmm. I believe that because there are lessons to be learned there. You know, don't reinvent the wheel, including don't
make the same mistakes.
Don't go back down the same colonialist road, right?
Yeah.
I mean, China as a world power has, you know, reportedly the fastest growing church on the planet and is sending missionaries to Africa and Asia, throughout Asia, and I think less Latin America. But in any case, they're, you know, very potentially going to be Christians caught up with a tidal shift in world power, in the configuration of nations and governments. Yeah. I don't mean that as a doomsayer. I'm not trying to bring up the Americans' concerns about China. I'm just saying that could happen. Yeah. And they could be in precisely not precisely they could be in a similar situation in which, you know, okay, so for example, Martin, I know that there are Chinese missionaries working in countries in Africa whose infrastructure is largely paid for by the Chinese government.
Mm-hmm.
Right, we're talking roads,
no
pipelines, mining.
Yeah, it almost sounds like the Roman Empire. I mean, just going to throw that out there, pipelines and roads. we're talking about imperial powers here, right?
Yeah, we're talking about imperial power, and so their relationships with local people who work for those companies or use those facilities is complicated as they're trying to share the gospel.
Power dynamics.
Okay? We have been here before, right? And so what I would want is them to mine Western missiology for lessons already learned, right?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
I'm sorry, it was a bunny trail, but I
love it.
My mind went there as you were talking.
It's so true. And it just, I mean, it is. So again, we did this, did this like month long trip in Asia, and we were, Japan was our last stop, another historical empire. And so like we went to Vietnam and Malaysia as well. And in Vietnam and in the Philippines in particular, it's, a lot of the wealthy elite are ethnically Chinese in those places. Mm-hmm. And it's a part of, you know, so the business owners in the Philippines, in the area where we were, in the Rizal province. There, I mean, almost everything is owned by what seems like Chinese. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's mostly Chinese that own everything. And I think that has, I think you're absolutely right that there are lessons that we, and here's what's cool is that I know that they are lessons that are being learned right now, mm-hmm. by Chinese. Mm-hmm. So there are Chinese that are picking up, you know, the Wilbert Shanks stuff, and they are, yeah. reading Bevins, and they're showing up at, you know, ASM, and they're, in fact, Robert, yep. Priest was talking about his training Chinese missionaries just recently,
yeah.
That are reaching out to, is it Eastern Europe, or he was in what, like in all the stands?
Yeah, I forget where it was. That sounds right.
I feel grateful for that. And, mm-hmm. and because it is a human thing, it's not just something that you're, you know, and this is a really important point to make. And I'm glad that you did, Greg. It's an important rabbit trail, you know, that we're talking about a human issue here, mm-hmm. not a white person issue, mm-hmm. not a Western person issue. It's wherever there are power asymmetries, right. humans tend to humans respond in a certain way. And that's why the cross is so bizarre, right? That's why, yeah. Jesus is so amazing. It's just, it's like, what? This is a paradigm shift, folks. This does not make sense within our regular in social imaginaries, right? This doesn't make sense within our regular ways of interacting with the other, of relating to other people.
All right. So what else did we appreciate about Kate's interview? I appreciated that she had very specific and relatively distinct answers.
Wishes or hopes, right?
The wishes,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Communication theory and what I would call diaspora missiology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she didn't use that term, but that's, I mean, she was talking, right. about the world coming to the West, right? So the world coming to places like, I mean, I'm in LA, man. It feels like the world is here. I love it. Yeah. I love the fact that we have so many different kinds of neighbors right here within a short drive of my house. And in fact, right here within a short walk of my home, right? It's, I love that.
I miss it.
But
yeah.
both of those are very specific wishes. And they are in some ways unique as well.
Yeah. Again, I mean, a contrast, a very interesting contrast. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember other folks saying that so far.
And I would, you know, it made me want to kind of communication theory. It's not a strong suit for me. So I'm curious about her work. I'm curious about what that would,
yeah,
look like.
Yeah, she mentioned dialectic mm-hmm. theory, and I was like, "Oh man, I want to read up on that. That, right. sounds cool."
Right. Yeah. So I like that she had a couple of things that, from her where she is, this is a direction to go, and yeah. I very much agree. Diaspora missiology has been on my radar. A little more aware of what's going on there, have to concur. I think that's that missiology would address that in the next, yeah. 20 years in more robust ways would be very, yeah. important.
Yeah, we're gonna have to get some folks that are doing that diaspora stuff on our interviews too on the missiology podcast. You know, sit down with some of the folks who have been early voices there, like Enoch Wan. You know,
yeah, Jared Looney.
Jared Looney is another one, exactly. Yeah. Folks that have been thinking deeply about, you know, what the Holy Spirit's doing on the ground, and they're also engaging neighbors who look very, yeah. different than them. Yeah. Well, we are grateful to Kate for, a really good interview. It was fun to get to sit down. It really kind of a change in pace, kind of a change in the feel of our interviews. Mm. Now we're talking to somebody who's at the beginning of their career, right? Yeah. We just had a conversation with someone it's like getting to sit down with Sherwood Langenfelter while he's still in Micronesia.
Right.
Like, tell us about what are the Yap Islands like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would ask our listeners to appreciate the contrast.
Yeah.
And sort of, because we're going to have more early career missiologists on the podcast, yeah. right? I mean, there's still, mm-hmm. a ton of other, sort of highly accomplished, published far down the road sorts of folks that we want to talk to. But we're not ageist here. We're not despising anyone's youth. And so, you know, so we'll have those sorts of conversations as well. And I think what Kate's interview revealed is that the contrasts are pretty generative. It's an interesting exercise just to think about how do you see missiology from where you're sitting. And, you know, we need the torchbearers to tell us which direction they're actually running.
Yeah, right. We don't want to make the same mistakes. There's a lot of tools that have been, refined over the years of missiological research. Those are important tools, whether we're talking about anthropology and ethnography, which we've been doing a lot over the last few, and we'll continue for the next couple of interviews as well. You know, anthropology has been huge. It gives us really important tools for this missiological work, this kind of missiological critical analysis that we're doing and encouraging. And, you know, what are some of those tools that, and this is an important question as well, right? What are some of those tools that you would say, hey, these are important concepts, ideas, frameworks, theories for someone who is, you know, just headed out to be a missionary in India, right? This is like tools that you would want a young newbigin to have, you know, when he's moving to India. You're like, these were the things that helped make newbigin. That's also a fun, interesting kind of question just to think through. Like, what are some of those things that really, they help? They make for robust missiology and missiological conversations.
I'll look forward to you providing that list.
Give me a couple of minutes right when we get off this, you know, we get off the call right now. Just give me a couple of minutes. I'll shoot it over to you.
Just jot it down, send it my way. Yeah. All right, brother. I appreciate you. I love getting to talk with you about these episodes. And thank you. Thank you for the way that you conduct the interviews and keep us rolling forward. You're the man.
Thank you. Thanks for bringing your gifts and talents to bear in these conversations, including a very incisive mind, like a no BS kind of approach to a lot of the conversations. I love it, man. It's awesome. And thank you to our listeners.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. We'll catch you soon.